Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
Is he breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catherine, how are you? It's good to see you.
Good. How are you, Dominic?
Jesus. Great. Fantastic.
I don't think I've ever actually called you Dominic.
I know. It's weird, isn't it? It's
Sorry.
A weird... It yeah, I know I'm in trouble when I get called Dominic.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
It's, well, you're not in trouble today, but Jace is, clearly.
Jace is. Poor Jace. Bless his heart. This is a slow, steady decline into a whole... Like, I forgot what happened in episode 4, and then I was just reading the notes on it, and I'm like, oh, that's right. This is a bad episode for me. It's rough.
Episode four is a bad episode for everyone.
Yeah. And 3 is not great for me either. Or Alec, bless him. Or Magnus, bless him, his poor heart. Anyway, we'll get into that. Stop rushing me.
Goodness gracious. So today, Dom, we are rewatching season 2, episode 3, Parabatai Lost. The original air date was January 16th, 2017, written by the lovely Peter Binswanger, who we just adore, and directed by the also lovely Gregory Smith, who we really, really enjoyed having on the show.
We loved Gregory.
Who I also worked with again in the Arrowverse, oddly enough. He bounces around.
No way, really?
Yeah. I worked with him on Arrow a couple years later. And I was like, oh, hey.
That's awesome.
This is cool. It's nice. It's nice when you get to run into people again. But this episode, as one may know, is starring myself as Clary Frey, you, Dom, as Jace Wayland, Alberto Resende, Matthew Daddario, Emerald Tabia, Isaiah Mustafa, Harry Shim Jr., with guest stars Alan Van Sprang, Alicia Wainwright in her first episode.
Welcome, Alicia.
On the series.
This is our
Welcome,
first episode.
Alicia. Woohoo! Christina Cox, David Castro, Maxime Roy, Nick Sagar, and Stephanie Bennett. Oof. Dom.
All the hits.
What are we in for?
All the hits.
Tell us.
Oh my goodness. Let me tell you. God, I forgot about this episode. There's so much just getting my ass kicked, and I'm so looking forward to it. The time is running out for Jace. Already cut off from the Institute and his friends, Jace finds his situation worsening when he becomes the target for the New York Wolfpack, who believe Jace to be a killer. And don't forget about Aldertree and the Shadowhunters, who continue their own hunt for Jace. With Jace becoming the most wanted man in New York, can his friends find him before everyone else does? There was a lot of Jace's in that sentence. I don't want to monopolize this episode. Although, do I? No, I would never. Meanwhile, Simon is on a search of his own as Raphael puts pressure on him to find Camille. Oh my goodness, so much. So much. So much that we're in for. I'm so excited.
So much. I am as well.
We also get to meet baby Jace and baby Alec in this one.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we should get all those folks. Baby Jace, baby Alec, and teenage Jace, teenage Alec, teenage Isabel.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they're all in it as well. Yeah, we should try and get them because they were all fantastic. And poor baby and teenage Jace had to wear a single brown contact lens, which I can tell you from experience is wildly uncomfortable. So credit to you guys for being so amazing.
Did they both have blue eyes naturally? And then
yes,
put
I believe so.
For...
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I see. I see.
Yeah, for just this one. Wait, is that one? I don't know why I'm looking into the distance. Like somehow I'm going to be able to see the color of my own eyes. I don't know. I know what's happening.
Oh, well. Although that's not uncommon on TV shows. I know there's several shows that folks have to wear contacts. Even on Arrow, Ben Lewis, who played my brother, I believe he had to wear blue contacts because the kid who played the young version of him for the first several seasons of Arrow, who was Anna Hopkins' son, by the way, on that show. It's another weird Arrowverse
contact. Son?
Yeah, Anna Hopkins plays my stepmom in Arrow as well.
She played, this kid played Anna Hopkins' son. I see.
And
I was like, how much
Ben
happened
Lewis.
Between us finishing this?
Years,
I was like 90% sure she had a corgi, but not children. I'm pretty sure.
No. Played her son, her fictional son.
Got it.
Adult version of Anna Hopkins' fictional son in Arrow also had to wear contacts. It's a long, convoluted genealogy, you know.
I see it. I get it. I'm so excited to get Anna on the show, but that's another conversation for another day.
We got to get to season three first, Dom. Come on.
I know. I just watched this YouTube thing. I was doing my research about this episode and it popped up and it was like Shadowhunters season four. And I was like, I don't think so because nobody's asked me about that. So I don't think so. But I watched it and it was like a recap and where season four might go and whatever. And then it reminded me of all this stuff we did in season three because it all seems like such a long time ago now. And especially doing a recap, I'm hyper aware of the stuff we did in season one because we just run through it all. Now starting to get more aware of season two, but I've completely forgotten about season three. And even the fact that we made it to season three, wow, how special. Anywho, Hoonier, filming began on, you're welcome. Filming began on August 30th and wrapped on September 10th, 2016. Wow. Are you out of your mind?
Wow.
Jace was originally going to be hiding out in a college in this episode. I didn't know that. Where did that information come from? I didn't know that. I was originally going to be hiding out in a college. Interesting.
Maybe it's a book thing.
Maybe.
But I don't think
Maybe it's
so.
A book thing. I don't
know. I don't remember that from the book.
Liz, you want to weigh in there? Do you know where this came from? I don't think we've ever had our producers' voices actually on the podcast yet, right?
Oh, no, we haven't.
Say hi to our amazing producing team. I'm actually ashamed of myself that we've done 20 plus episodes and we haven't said hello to our incredible team.
They're
that
hiding
actually
from us, Dom.
Do all of the work is the reality. No, you don't want to say
we
hi?
We don't want to come out of the shadows.
That's okay.
They're hiding in the shadows. They're glamored.
It turns out our producers are not being recorded. So even we just had a little conversation. This can sound very strange because it sounds like we're talking to nobody. But we had a conversation and basically they said they really dislike Kat and refuse to be on voice on the show.
Wow.
And you can't hear them, so they can't even deny it.
Sure. No, it's fine.
No,
it's fine.
Absolutely
you can say whatever
not.
You want.
Absolutely not. They they are going to be our voiceless partners in this, but I promise you that they do all the work. They make us look fantastic. So thank you, as always, guys, for that. Kat, I was talking for a long time just then. I'm going to have a sip of my not beer. And you talk for a bit.
You're not beer? Absolutely. Well, look,
it's
in the
appropriate
UK and
beer time
I'm in Santa
me.
Fe. It's appropriate beer time for you. I'm drinking tea because it's 8 in the morning here. So, you mm-hmm. know, we're doing our thing. Anywho, there's a few book things that I really enjoy. I love something, and I don't know if we get to see much of this in the third season because Luke kind of steps away from the police force. But in season two, we get to see a lot of this crossover of police force and werewolf head of pack and shadow hunter work. You really get to see how this world works behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately we have, you know, Gretel has an unfortunate fate in the beginning of this episode, but we get to see the werewolf funeral practices just a little bit. We get to see the first glimmer of them. We see more later on in season three. Mm-hmm.
We don't talk about it yet.
We're not talking about it yet. I refuse to acknowledge it, but we do get to see Luke put Gretel to rest with the Beati Bellicosi, which is the equivalent to the Ave Atque Vale in the Shadowhunters world. We get to see a lot of Latin in this episode.
We do. I was just going to say.
Luke is speaking Latin.
Wasn't the translation here somewhere? Something about warriors, like lay my warrior to rest or something?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I just read this somewhere.
Oh, that's right. I forgot it was the motto of the Praetor Lupus. Which,
yeah.
The Praetor Lupus is something we didn't really get into too much in the series, and it's so unfortunate, because in the books, it's got such a cool... Did you ever... Anyway, in the books, it has a really cool mythology, and it's sort of like the Jedi of the Shadow World.
We see them, like, right at the end, right? Like, right at the end of Season 3, we see them pop out. It's all coming back to me now. We don't talk about Season 3, though, yet, Kat. That was a trap,
Sorry.
And I fell for it. Where is the translation for this? I just read it somewhere. Didn't I?
We'll find it.
I wouldn't have gone that far down.
Well, while you're looking for that, let's get into the beginnings of this episode. So the end of last week's episode, we Dot tore through the wards on Ballantyne's ship, and we ran and jumped over the edge, or our stunt doubles did, rather.
Yeah, we didn't do it.
We didn't do it. They didn't let us. In fact, it's very funny. I just had a similar situation on set this week where there was water and jumping, and they didn't let us do it again, and I was so frustrated.
Water in Santa Fe?
I mean, there's ponds. We're set in Texas.
I thought it was all like desert.
We gotta find water somewhere.
Sure.
I mean, it's a lot of desert, but it's so green this year. There must have been a ton of rain over the winter because it's inordinately green here. It's definitely different than the pilot. But hey.
Sure. The Google translation for Beati Bellicosi is not correct. Well, maybe it is correct
it?
And we just stretched it. This just says happy warriors, and I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's something a werewolf would say to
happy
a dead
warriors.
Werewolf. Happy warriors. See you around. I don't think that's the case. So I think we did something
else. Yeah, I'm sure it is. All right, so we start this episode with a flashback.
The babies. The little babies.
Oh,
my God.
Babies.
These guys were awesome. These guys were so good. And they... We talk about this all the time with guest stars coming in and having to just entirely immerse themselves in this world that has existed before them. And especially when we get to season two, it's existed before them for a year or so. And it's been successful enough to bring it back for a season two. So there's a lot of pressure coming in. And these guys are like 12, 13 years old. And they have to come in with that same mindset. And not only that, but I don't know about you, Kat, necessarily. But for me, in my experience, playing someone who's existed... Like, so I did a movie where I played Jagger, and there was Mick Jagger, and there was a huge amount of pressure to get everything right because it's already happened. There isn't any creative, like, nuance to it. It's like this is done a certain way. And these guys really threw themselves into it. And I remember him talking to me and wanting to get into Jace's mindset. And I thought that was the coolest thing, especially for a young actor. So these guys had the right mindset to do very well in this industry. And I hope they do. Anyway. We see Jace and Alec bond for the first time. We see them sort of meld for the first time. We get to see a tiny little bit of Jace's little traumatic past, just a little tiny bit.
Yeah, one thing I think is really interesting just about this first scene, you know, our training room, this set, which is used so much in this episode, was still really new. And I remember that, you know, we were still kind of breaking it in. These kids got to break it in for us, basically. You know, we get to every time. And all of these sets were so new. These bedroom sets.
They actually might have been the second thing that was shot there. You guys, you and M shot your fight scene there.
Yeah.
And then and then it was this. And it might have been the second thing we ever shot there.
I think so. Well, and then even this next scene with Magnus and Alec and Isabel. This was one of the first times we get to see Alec's bedroom. And this is the first kind of, you know, we had in season one, the bedrooms were the upper level of it was our training room, basically. Our original training room that had been transformed, converted, whatever word you want to use, into the bedrooms. And now we actually had these hallways to explore. And I remember I used to always get lost, even though it was like a hallway and a half.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't, though. It was a whole, like, by the end of season two, it was a whole functioning institute. Like, it was, there was you could literally walk from the entrance all the way through past everyone's bedrooms. The bedrooms were that corridor on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
And you could walk out to the left-hand side and Oldertree's office or the head of the institute's office, whoever
with
it was
the
at the time, was there with the balcony. And then you could keep walking through to sort of the outside area. Like, it was all a functioning space at that point, and they could use it however they wanted. And that was really cool. And I don't know if we'd quite reached that stage yet, but by the end of season two, 100% we had a fully functioning institute.
I know at that point we had two rooms off to it. We had like two rooms in a hallway. We had one room that was Alec's bedroom and Aldertree's office, and then another room that was Clary's bedroom, because we were in Clary's bedroom a lot in the first part of the season. So they just kind of left it set up. But let's talk about Alec. So we've got Magnus trying to bring Alec back from his parabatai.
The brink of death.
Yeah, the brink of death. You know, happens
a few times.
The brink of death,
as we often are in this. Poor Matt. I forget that, because this is one of my absolute favorite episodes that we did, especially that last scene. And Greg did such a good job directing. It was, I think we only did it two times, really, because it was really quite harrowing to do.
Yeah,
I think we only did it two or three times. And Greg is a really cool, like, sort of direction. It's not even a direction. It's a really cool, it's a cool connection to get with your director when they come in and go, that was on the money. Let's just do it again. Let's just do another one of those. And you're like, amazing, dude, that's great. I love that. And it's not that we're necessarily adverse to taking these notes necessarily, but just it's like that scene in the mid-season finale of season two. It's one of those things where you're like, we checked the boxes there. Like, everyone knows they did a good job, and we're like, great, cool. Everyone's happy. Yeah. We just do it one more time. We get it in the bag.
Yeah, but by this point, too, we were so kind of in tune with these characters and these character relationships. And I think we were just starting to really hit our stride with the world and the family of the characters. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to see directors come in and people like Greg come in. Sally Whitfield was another one who just dove in and understood the world from day dot. And trusted us. And it became this kind of partnership with these new directors of, as we got more comfortable owning these characters, these directors would come in, recognize that, and then play with us. And it became such a cool give and take. And it really taught me a lot about, you know, this format of what we do.
Yeah, definitely. I was actually very sad that we didn't get Greg back at any point, but obviously he's a busy man. Sally, we were very fortunate to get back a few times, I think. And we have Sally direct three or four episodes or something. Sally's fucking
something
great.
Something like that. Yeah, I know. I've been trying to steal her over here, but she's a busy woman too. They're all busy.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they're good at what they do and they're appreciated in their field, of course. That's the best problem to have.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes
I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to the story, Alex dying, mm-hmm. Magnus is trying to help. That's a very lucid way of saying it, but that's basically exactly what's happening. And then my least favorite shot, arguably, that we ever did on the show.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the dreaded
there's
sweater?
There's so much going on that I hate. So let's start with the sweater. The sweater was horrendous, and I was promised that I would only wear it for one episode. That it turned out to be a lie. I wear it for like three or four episodes. Absolutely hated the thing. It was super itchy. When you put blood on it, it got really sticky. When you put it in water, the whole thing like extended somehow. So like there's the scene that's coming up now where I come out of the water, you'll see that one of my sleeves is like three sizes too long all of a sudden. It's just because you added water to it and it expanded like they're fucking sea monkeys or some shit. I don't know how it happened, but this is what happened here. And then on top of all of that, it's first thing in the morning, the water is freezing ass cold, and I don't care about being in the water at all, but it's dirty. It's like full of stuff.
Like
so
trash.
Before each take, I would sort of try and push it all to the side because they wanted me to wake up underwater because the camera is underwater with me, which ends up being on screen for a blink of an eye. But I remember sort of being on my hands and knees being like, okay, are we ready? Because the tide's going to change and we're ready. Okay, great. And I would just sort of move as much shit to one side as I can and put myself underwater and then wake up and do this whole thing. This isn't fun. To make it look like you've been underwater, like you're choking, you kind of have to choke. Like you have to put the weight to the back of your throat and make it feel like you're actually sort of coughing up water. You actually do an amazing job of this in season two when we go to Idris for the first time, I think.
Oh, yeah. When we were frozen, literally. When we were freezing cold.
You do an amazing job of this. And I remember watching you drink and send it to the back of your throat and then cough it back up. And it was a very, very, very accurate depiction of what happens here. It's very good, but it's not comfortable. It's not a comfortable thing to do, is what I'm saying.
No, it's not.
Anyway.
But we had a great medic, so we can trust in Drew, our set medic, to save us.
Always. Trust in Drew, always. Anyway, Jace wakes up in the water. He's not feeling so good, and he finds Dave Gretel.
Although there's something something I love about this is his first thought is Stelle, his second thought is Clary, and then he figures it out. And then he kind of comes to and figures it out. It's such a very Jace. It's such a great marrying of Pete
very much.
And
it happens
you.
Again later. Actually, it happens again when he gets on the phone to Izzy. I noticed the exact same thing. And then this jogger, some psycho jogger who's jogging at 7 o'clock in the morning by the lake. What is wrong with you, lady? There's nobody else on this beach. Come on.
I mean, I used to jog at 7 a.m. by the lake in Toronto.
And I think you're a psycho for it because it's insane. It's an insane thing to do.
But why does she think you killed her? Why doesn't she think you saved her? This is my thing. She immediately goes to like, oh my God, he's a serial killer. And I get that there's been like a demonic killer on the loose in New York or whatever. And maybe she's on edge. But come on.
Has that even happened? Oh yeah, that has happened. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
What I didn't understand is how can she see me?
Well, you don't have your cellie. You don't know about your other thing yet. And
so
right?
The
we haven't established the golden eye thing yet. We haven't done
maybe.
That.
Maybe, yeah. No. That's a ways away. Yeah, I'll buy that.
I don't think you're glamored actively.
Okay. Yeah. So you see like a bloodied, like wet tattooed man cradling a dead lady's body. You're going to start thinking some shit. I get it. I understand that. Mm-hmm. I think my response would be the same. Like, hey man, I don't know what's going on here, but you saying, no, it's not what you think is not an appropriate response. That's not enough for me to be like, oh, okay, fair enough. I'll continue with my jog. I'm going to call the cops. Like 100% that's what's going to happen there.
Absolutely.
Although even that, I don't know why Jace's response was like, oh, yeah, you should absolutely call the cops. That's going to end up back with Luke, and I'm going to end up back with my people. Like, that was the whole sort of aim with jumping off his bike. I don't really know what the issue with that is. But there you go. It adds to the drama.
It's a waterlogged brain. You know, you're just a little, you hit your head. You're not thinking straight.
I get it. It's a whole thing. I get it.
But this next shot was one of my, I've seen, you know how much the Shadow fam loves to gift things. There are several moments where Clary storms into the Institute in various states of distress. And this one is always gift. And I got a huge kick out of the fact that she has no shoes. She's looks like a drowned rat. And her face
no shoes
she's all beat
or
up.
Socks, by the way. No shoes or socks. Yeah. At some point in the water, swimming through the Hudson back to the Bay of New York, you figured that not only the boots were slowing you down, but also these Adidas ankle socks. That's enough of you. And off they went. Food for the fishes.
I love that you think I was cool enough to wear Adidas ankle socks under my boots. I was always in unicorn socks or some kind of animal silliness.
Yeah. We also get to see our first example of, and I want this to end up like as a hashtag that runs through because it happens so often. We get our first like, poor Ray. Ray's just trying to do his job, man. Raj.
Raj.
No, it's Raymond who played him.
Raymond plays Raj. Yeah.
Poor Raj.
It happens all the time.
It happens to him twice in this episode.
At
I think
least twice.
In this episode, he gets
a lot of shit happening to him in this, or a lot of poor he gets Ray. A lot of stuff poor happening Raj. To him in this episode because he gets you know there are events and I think Stephanie and he have a heart to heart, as it were, later in the episode.
Do they? I was thinking about the Magnus Raj deal.
Heart later in the episode. If you know what I'm saying.
I see. Yeah, I get it.
But, you know, we also have, I love that Clary is finally seeing through Jocelyn's kind of misguidedness.
Manipulation.
As it were.
It's a manipulation, 100%. Yeah. Like, it's very, very, it's not quite this bad, but what was her name? Gypsy, the character that Joey played, that whole thing where the mom tries to manipulate.
Yeah.
And it
Mommy
was
Dearest.
Patricia Arquette. It's an amazing show if you haven't seen it. But yeah, it is. It's 100%. And actually, Magnus calls her out on it later on because she is manipulating the people around her to just sort of fit into this highly filtered world that she's existed for herself. And that's just not how it works. You can't really. We actually touch on it a little in, not a little, we touch on it quite a lot in Partner Track. We touch on people dealing with problems in a very filtered way, in a very like, well, if this doesn't affect me, then what's the issue? This is how it is. And that's not the case. The world and society in general is a success because we sort of, whether it's conscious or unconscious, look out for each other, however it is, whether it's, you know.
Right.
Anyway, that's enough existentialism from me.
Well, no,
I evidently have had too much beer.
But in Jocelyn's case, it's slightly understandable. You know, she was manipulated by Valentine for so long and then just had to survive and protect Clary. So she's had to shut herself off to thinking about anyone but her and Clary. Keep you alive, keep you safe.
I guess what I'm saying is when you're trying to protect someone on your own, but also rely on other people for that.
Yeah.
So Magnus, the other Shadowhunters, whatever, she's sort of relied on these people to come in. It's unfair to rely on those people, but entirely negate their opinion on what is and is not
100%.
Correct within this world, right? Like if it's someone who doesn't understand the world, then fair enough. Like she's not going to a mundane therapist and being like, what do you think? And she'd be like, you're insane. You're going to a fucking loony bin.
Yeah.
That, fair enough. I understand that. But Magnus is a very experienced man and he understands this world and understands some of the choices. And I think that's where the manipulation comes. That's why I would use the word manipulation because manipulating someone in my head very often, more often than not, is very selfish. And in this case, this seems it was selflessness masquerading as selfishness because she could have used these sources, right?
Well, she even manipulates Alec, which is why he's in the situation he's in right now. It compounds in many ways.
Yeah.
But, you know,
spoiler alert, she's going to get hers in a couple of episodes.
No, well, next episode.
Is it next episode?
It's next episode.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Anyway, you know, so we have Clary and Jocelyn butting heads and Aldertree and Jocelyn apparently on the same side.
This is a badass shot. It's right after the credits. I'm just watching it now. I have my iPad up here. This, like, the symmetry of you coming in, you've got no shoes, and poor Raj is like, hey, let me help. And you're like, fuck you, get away from me.
Yeah!
Straight in. Oh, so good. So good. Also, the makeup team, I noticed this earlier. The makeup team, the especially the one on your chin, the scratch slash bruise, is so good. Like, so good. I was actually, I rewatched this episode, and I was like, did she fall out of her trailer again? Because that's what it looks like. It looks that good.
Well, this is when we had Randy Dodlin as our head of makeup. Mm-hmm. So he was able to just do, because he had been our special effects makeup season one. And he came in and just was able to, you know, beat us up, which was amazing. Yep. We had to fight for that too, because this was a new thing for Freeform. It was a new sort of step for them to allow characters to look bloody or destroyed or, you know, disheveled in any way.
Which I still stand. I think that's the best characters look always, like a little beaten up.
Oh, yeah.
I think is the coolest you ever look, especially in, well, not especially, only in like an action-based show or movie. I think that's the coolest you look. Like, the coolest I think Tom Cruise looks is when I think he's going to lose. You know what I mean? Like, right on that precipice. I know he's not. It's Tom Cruise. Like, I know he's not going to not complete this impossible mission.
Of course.
But the best ones are the ones where I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. And that's when I think we look the coolest in this as well, is when you're like, I don't know. I don't know if you, I don't know.
Yeah. We're usually also damp. Whenever we're the most beat up, we're always damp. They love to throw in water at us on
this show. So much more than I wanted to be, honestly, wet. Anyway, we got to start whizzing through this. I'm aware that it's me digressing.
Boat, basin, Simon.
Simon and Mum.
Alberto and Christina always break my heart.
Oh my God, because I know what's coming. I know what's going to happen. And so many of our listeners know what's going to happen. That one scene.
Season three. It's season three.
Oh, it is. You're right. Yeah. It is. Oh, yeah. I'm devastated. Absolutely devastated that we have to wait that long.
Hold your horses, Sherwood.
No more words for me.
Thank you. But we get to see him in the boat basin, and we get to see him, you know, I love seeing Simon take ownership of his vampireness and really become, you know, for lack of a better word, kind of the Peter Parker of our world. Yeah. And he really, you know, he sticks the landing, and he's, you know, he's really starting to, it's becoming a part of who he is, and he's owning it, and it's making the best of a bad situation. But, you know, it's turning tomatoes into pomelo juice. Right?
Do you mean?
I don't know. I was trying to do a vampire metaphor. Turning pomegranate juice into vampire blood.
Oh, I see. Okay, I see. I see what you were trying to do
it's
there.
It's a really bad metaphor.
You went a ways away from what I was thinking. But you know what? This is why we love you, Kat, because sometimes you're a fucking idiot. You're one of the smartest fucking idiots I've ever met in my entire life, and that's great.
Thank you.
I'm just a fucking idiot. I don't have the smarts to carry it through.
I try. Sometimes my brain makes too many leaps that I can't explain. Anyway.
I get it.
Now we're back on the beach and we get the lovely Beatty Bellicosi moment.
We do.
I love how how Isaiah plays this character, because he has such a commanding authority, but also this sort of care and this tenderness with his pack that is, to me, exemplifies what the werewolves are. You know, they are a family and they are, there's this sort of an animalistic side on both aspects, both the hard and the soft. They have this undying kind of love and care and loyalty to each other, but they're also hard. It's almost akin to the law is hard, but it's the law when it comes to the shadow hunters, but it's, you know, the laws of nature, as it were, for them.
Totally. It's instinctual. Yeah. I completely agree.
And we get Joel, who we love.
And we get Joel.
And now we get the moment that you mentioned earlier where Jocelyn calls, or where Magnus calls Jocelyn out. And, you know, I think I love that they continue to develop the quote unquote grown-ups on the show as well. And they're flawed. They're not perfect. The parents are not without faults of their own. The parents are not without, you know, we see this with Maris especially. And I mean, really with Valentine.
And
but,
Robert.
You know, he's kind of.
Oh, and Valentine. Yeah, yeah. And Lilith doesn't do a great job either. And Asmodeus. You know what? All of the parents kind of suck. I don't think there's a parent that is just like, yeah, you did it. You did a great job. That's great. Because that doesn't make good TV.
You sort of get that in fantasy a lot.
Yeah.
Exactly. Although Magnus, arguably, as a parent, isn't. He's probably the best parent, even though he's not
really
a
parent.
Yeah, with, you know, Madsy. And even in this episode, he talks about the downloaders he takes in are his children, the Raphaels and the Simons and the, you know,
yeah,
the
Madsys
of the world.
Fair enough. And he does do a very good job. You're right.
Yeah. And then next we have one of my favorite scenes because it was the first one I really got to be one-on-one with Nick Sagar, who he's so gloriously manipulative and evil and wonderful in this. But we get to see Aldertree, who I don't understand. I always wondered if, from Aldertree's side of things, if recording these interviews was actually legitimate in that he was turning these tapes into the Clave, or it was just a way for him to create an atmosphere that seemed official but was really manipulative.
See, this is why I don't really necessarily think he's a bad guy. I think he just is another one. Like, he's that sort of integer period between, like, us as the Shadowhunters, Jace, Clary, Alec, Izzy, the new breed of Shadowhunters, and then like Meris, Jocelyn, Robert, those guys, the old breed of Shadowhunters. He's that like interim where he's like, there are still rules. Like, there are rules that we follow, and those rules are in place for a reason. That's why I don't really think that he's a bad guy. And actually, very often, I think that we're just useless Shadowhunters because we don't follow the rules and get into trouble all the time. Constantly, we get into trouble.
But then it's this existential question of, you know, you have the law, which is black and white and is meant to protect, but often the situations that the Shadowhunters end up in the field are never black and white. And so you can't apply these beliefs of the Clave to what the Shadowhunters are doing. Also, I love that in this scene, you have Clary's sort of mundane spidey senses kicking in and going, I don't 100% trust this guy, so I'm not going to be 100% honest. And I'm going to play the dumb half Shadowhunter and make up a story here. Also, I don't know if it was me or wardrobe or fashion in 2016, but I went through a real choker phase the beginning part of this season. And it makes me laugh so much.
It's so funny. It's so like early 2000s. It's such an interesting... I remember you walking on set and being like, that's such a weird fucking choice right now. Yeah. That's awesome. I'm into it.
I think there were a lot of book references that... Because the books came out in like 2007.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of references in the books when it comes to fashion and things like that to that world. And I think I was just in that headspace. And there was a big resurgence of early 2000s stuff in 2016. Chokers were
it's
like
all cyclical. Fashion is so cyclical. Like, I just spoke with a stylist for the Partner Track sort of screening event that we're doing. And it's so much of it is like... They were like, do you like pocket watches? And I was like from the 20s? Hell yeah, I like pocket watches. Let's go. That sounds awesome. Such a weirdly cyclical, what's that, pocket watches? I have two. I have the one that you got me from Arden's collection, actually, still. It's upstairs.
I have
a little watch box. I have that one. And then my mum got me this gorgeous antique gold, like, I think 1820s, 1830s, like hand-wound pocket watch one Christmas.
Okay.
Yeah, I got these. I got
a
couple.
Way to go, Mom.
I know. Mom does a good job with gifts. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. No. Although I love you, Mom.
I love your mom, too. But here we are back with Izzy and Clary consorting against Aldertree, which...
This is an interesting height dynamic that they obviously haven't given you your heels, because I think you and Em are the same height, right? Like, very
just about. I'm a little taller than her, but
they've obviously not given you your heels, and they've given Em her heels, and there's a huge disparity in height there all of a sudden. I just seen it, like, right as you come in the scene, there's a shot from behind Emerald, like a big wide shot from behind Emerald, and I'm like, hold on, that doesn't look quite right, because she looks massive. She looks so much taller than you.
Well, this episode was interesting because I was with it's next episode that I'm with both of them. And so trying to figure out what shoes to put Clary in, because normally when I was with Emerald, they would put me in flatter shoes. And then when I was with you and Matt, they'd put me in giant shoes.
The higher ones.
Fit us in the same shot. But, you know, we made it work. Tricks of film.
Tricks of film.
Okay, there's one shot here of you walking down a street. Was it on green screen?
No, it was on green screen because we didn't have Chinatown yet.
I was going to say we didn't. But then we get to see Hunter's Moon for the first
time. Hunter's Moon and Maya for the first time. So as some of you will remember from a previous episode, Kat very miraculously remembered that the Hunter's Moon set is actually a reused version of the boat of Valentine's original cargo ship. And that we took that apart. So if you look closely at these scenes, you can see that the walls are actually slightly slanted and they look like ship's walls, the metal and sort of corrugated, and you can see it in this. There are a couple hair mistakes in this. We were in a hair process throughout.
Really?
And you can see, you can see bobby pins in my hair holding it out of my face.
Stop it.
Yeah, yeah. This is a cool scene. This was a cool entrance, and Alicia did a really good job here. Again, another guest star coming in. She ended up being a series regular, but another guest star coming in a world that already exists in a slightly daunting stage, and she did a very good job of initiating who Maya is and what her place is going to be in this world.
Well, it's such a big task, too, because she's such a highly anticipated character, given how many ties she has to so many different characters in the world and what other characters she brings with her eventually. But, you know, we get another badass female in this world, and it's who is entirely different than all the other ones we have. And it's really fantastic to see. But I do love this arc that you have with her in this episode, because it establishes, again, something we don't get to see a lot of because we're so insular in the world of the Shadowhunters. Mm-hmm. You get to see not only the outside world of Mundanes and New York, but you get to see a little bit of the werewolf Shadowhunter dynamic outside of Luke and Alaric, which is, you know, not always the smoothest.
Sure isn't.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we're back at the Institute, and we see Isabel and Clary scheming once again, trying to figure out how to get to Jace. They can't track him. They can't do anything.
Yeah.
And the only thing that they know is that, you know, he's not dead, which is, it's good news that they know Jace isn't dead, but it doesn't help them much. Then suddenly, fortuitously, Isabel's phone rings, and it's Jace. And first thing he asks about is Clary, which I absolutely love. Yes, shadow hunting is the first thing on Jace's mind, but then right after that is Clary. Because not only, you know, it's his sister And we want to keep her safe. And he's really taking that brotherly role on and looking out for her. But they have a mission. And they fill each other in on the information, as Shadowhunters can only do on the phone. Fill him in on how Alec is doing, which worries him very, very much. Obviously, Jace didn't know that Alec had tried to track him, didn't know that Alec was in this state, knows the Clave is after him, but now is even more torn than ever because his brother-in-arms, his Parabatai, his one and only partner is in trouble and is about to die for all intents and purposes. But even beyond that, you know, Jace is torn in so many different directions right now. And this is tough for him because not only is he torn between his sister, his duty as a shadow hunter, his mission to stop Valentine, knowing the Clave is after him, now Alec needs him, and the werewolves are asking things of him. And it's one of those moments where you go, yes, I would do my job normally, but I'm having a really bad day, and I just need a second. I just need a second to sort my life out and sort my brother out. They don't know who they're dealing with, and all they see is a shadow hunter who's not doing their duty, who's abandoning them once again to the inequalities and the inequities that exist in this world. And unfortunately, Jace has stumbled into werewolf territory and is not in a situation where he can explain himself and gets his butt handed to him and goes through a glass window. I believe this is the first plate glass window we get to see Jace go through in the series. We have a lot of people go through plate glass windows, and it's not great. It's not great.
That was Aaron. That was Aaron through the plate glass window. It's one they wouldn't let me do. And Aaron does an amazing job. Honestly, I was honored to be able to be doubled by him. He does such an incredible job. It was great. As much as I wanted to do all of the stunts that I possibly could, in this case, I was not allowed.
I will say, we have a lot of, in this episode and next, the fights look so good. You really get to see the Maguire brothers, Darren and team, hit their stride. Mm-hmm. In this, because they got into the world, and you know they really came through in the first couple episodes and really get to shine in the next several. But in this next scene, we have Raphael coming back to haunt Simon, literally and figuratively. Because they're still dealing with Camille. Camille's still on the loose. Vampire dens causing a ruckus. Everyone's upset. NYPD's upset. The Clave is upset. Everyone wants to is after Raphael because they think it's him because he's now de facto head of the clan, but it's really Camille. But again, as often happens in the shadow world, nobody wants to listen to explanations. They just want to punish people.
Mm-hmm. Go, go, go. I will say that these two had an incredible charisma together. They did such a good job developing this relationship. And I know that Alberto and David got quite close over the course of filming, and it really shows. They do a very, very good job.
It does. I always feel, you know, they're like mini glimpses of the Godfather, you know, these scenes between the two of them. It's a slightly New York mafioso kind of.
Totally. Also, if Alberto doesn't end up playing a young Brando at some point, I will eat my hat. Like that photo, like, you remember when Brando did that
photo?
Like,
yes, yeah. I do.
He absolutely needs to play a young Brando. And I know Alberto would absolutely crush it. So. If nobody's writing that, then one of our listeners, please get on writing a Brando biopic and cast Alberto in it.
All I ask is that I get to play Elaine Stritch in the biopic. I just want to do that.
I'm happy just to watch it, honestly. I'll just view from a distance and watch this mastery unfold.
I know. Alberto would absolutely slay it, too. And then Simon goes home and sees his room.
Still in disarray
because he destroyed it. And I don't know how much, it'd be interesting to ask Alberto how much, you know, because when he was in that state of vampirism, does he remember doing that? How much does he remember? Was it sort of a fugue state or not? We don't know.
But
finds a bottle of vodka. And then we're back with Clary and Izzy. Simon calls Clary to ask for help because, hey, my mom's missing and there's a bottle of vodka and this is not good.
Yeah.
This is, again, where the mundane world creeps into the shadow world with often worse consequences shadow world can exhibit. And unfortunately, fortunately, Clary actually is a good friend this time and goes off to help Simon, which I appreciate because she's not been there for Simon in the way that she should be in a lot of ways.
There's a lot going on. I get it. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. Then we're back with Luke with his other daughter. In Maya, which we get to see. He's just the dad of everyone, and it's the best. He's the good dad. He's the good cop.
He's the good dad. He's the best parent. How did we not talk about
there
Luke?
There you go.
Obviously, Luke is the best parent. Wow. I feel stupid for not having brought that up. Wow. He's obviously the best parent.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, we were in the Institute thinking of all the parents that aren't good and trying to make excuses for them. So, you know, he just slipped under the radar because he not only does his job, his mundane job, his Shadow World job, and his familial job.
Yeah, he's got a lot going on.
He's the most capable character, I think, of all of them.
100%. 100% by the longest way. Yeah, 100%. He did just threaten Jace, which I don't love. But fair enough. I understand.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to keep up appearances, if nothing else.
Yeah,
you know?
I get it. I get it.
Would
and
he
he's
really
not
follow
wrong.
Through? Would he? No.
Listen,
Claire would go, but Dad.
And he yeah, that's possible.
Claire would go, but Daddy, I love him.
Yeah. And he is my brother, kind of, sort of. So he's like kind of my stepdad at this point. Like in a weird way, he's kind of my stepdad.
Yeah.
Yeah. The links are all there.
He really becomes your stepdad later.
Yeah. I think poor Raj is about to get smacked in the chest.
Yeah.
Is that what's about to happen?
No, he gets assigned. Raj is just kind of being a butt right now.
Yeah.
Because he comes in and he's like, oh, sorry. It's just orders. Sorry.
It is just orders, though. I kind of get it. Like,
no.
You can't, like, if this
have a
was
heart,
a,
though, Raj.
I kind of, like, I, but if this was a real military service, like, if this was a real branch of the military, you're like, what are you doing, you psychos? The guy that we're looking for just ran off with the enemy. Like, he's dead to us. Like, he's a traitor. Like, that's absolutely what it is. But we love these people. So, listen, we're going to bend the rules for them. That's what's going to happen.
I'm still so interested to see what, you know, I want to follow Raj and Aldertree's story.
Me too.
And Lydia. And just have them all having a beer at the end of the day and be like, what are we going to do with these guys?
Yeah, honestly, Alberto and I had an idea that was just like basically the background, like the supporting artists of our show. And it was just their story. So like we'd walk past them in a scene. And then you would, instead of following us, you would follow the supporting artists. And they'd be like, these fucking guys, honestly, we're constantly cleaning up their messes. Like, it's such a nightmare. Yeah. Like, nobody really likes them. That's why they kind of hang out on their own. And we're like the sort of emo-y kids of the New York Institute, where it's like, you just kind of let them do their thing. And then we clean up after they're done.
Yeah. Did you hear Jace jam the copy machine last week?
Ugh, yeah, like
spent
that
forever
sort of
pulling
stuff.
Paper
yeah.
out of it. Yeah.
He thought it was hilarious, but like it's a nightmare for us. Why did this happen? And then like later on when Jace is cleaning weapons, everyone's just like, yeah, you got yours, buddy. It's about time.
And speaking of time, we go back in time once again to see Jace and Alec. And I find it interesting because, again, this is another time we get to utilize so much of our soundstage. This was back up where we did the Shaq's Demons, where
it was
the nurse football, where Clary stabbed Jace in season one, but they sort of redressed it, relit it, shot it from a different angle, and created this
holostage
stage of VR. This hologram fighting test space in our institute. Again, shout out to Folks VFX for just so seamlessly
such a good job.
Putting
again,
these things
as
together.
Always.
I'm constantly
and to the
impressed.
Two guys, we've got to look up their names. I feel terrible that I don't remember them, but to the two guys who play young Jace and young Alec, again, do such a fantastic job. And again, it's difficult to come into these things and just throw yourself into it. So real credit to those guys.
Yeah. That's just Toronto, man. They had so many amazing folks just there. So much talent in front of and behind the camera.
Agreed.
And then off we are again to Alec having a fever dream of all of this. Please don't die, Alec.
Please don't die, Alec.
I do remember, though, Matt had a good time during this episode. He'd come up to me every day and go, I spent this much on Amazon today.
Yeah.
I did this much. It's just they're shopping.
A lot of not very much.
He had to be passed out the whole episode. It was bad. We all had those days.
The tricky thing with being asleep or passed out on set is to not actually fall asleep. You have to get into this sort of weird zen place where you're like, I'm awake and I'm focused on what's going on, but I'm also really comfortable and supposed to be asleep. Because that's how you fall asleep in real life, is you pretend to be asleep. That's how you actually would go about it. And the trick here is to not actually do it, sort of do the opposite. This takes us to the dreaded alleyway with my fake belly. I had a full prosthetic belly so a shard of glass could be put into it, which turned out to be entirely useless because the shard of glass doesn't come out of me in this scene. So that was just a bit of a waste, unfortunately. But It comes out in the next one and I use the same belly, so everything's fine.
Well, there you go.
But Jace isn't looking
at
so good.
Our subway station.
This might be one of the first times we got to see... Oh, no, this was actually outside, though. This was out on the street. So it is a real...
But they had this subway stop that they would move to every set we went to, because the subway stops in Toronto did not look like this. Mm-hmm. And so they bought it in pieces. And every episode, we would get a new side to it because it was so expensive. They had to peter it out over several episodes. And then eventually we had the whole one and they would just change the sign on it and move it around.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Whatever street corner. Yeah.
Very interesting. Which takes us to Jace in a mundane hospital. What are the mundanes going to do? How are they going to treat him? Who knows? What's his blood going to turn up like? Not good, probably, to a mundane. These guys were all very good as well. The medical prowess of these guys was fantastic. They all did a very, very good job.
See, I didn't get to go. I was never on this hospital set, but actually, I was never on the. You guys went back to the hospital a fair few times.
Yeah, and you and I don't think you ever came with us.
No, I never did. But you know, I was off with the vampires doing tracking and stuff.
Come out of the coffin. That's funny.
That's great, though, right?
Yeah.
But this is again. It's one of those moments where. I love this friendship between Clary and Simon. And yes, we're starting to see sparks. And yes, we're starting to see other things. Mm-hmm. But it really establishes how much they need the mundane world and how much they need this friendship. And they're not – they're fully immersed in the shadow world, but they're still tethered to all their past and their childhood and all of these things and all of these people, including Simon's mom, that made them who they are. And just because Simon is this thing now – it's nice that he has a moment where he can be reminded that he's still, you know, a person in a lot of ways. He's still Simon. He's not the person. He's not a monster. He's not this thing that everybody's telling him he is.
Yeah.
He's still Simon.
He's still Simon.
And again, with Clary, we see this more later. This is the first glimmer that we see of Clary and the Morgensterns being sort of the opposite of the emotions cloud judgment realm of the shadow world. You know, that's such a staunch shadow hunter's principle. But when it comes to the Morgensterns, their emotions fuel their power and their emotions allow them to kind of release what makes them special, which is dangerous, which is probably why the emotions cloud judgment element exists for the shadow hunters.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's through this kind of connection that she's able to do it as he says and let go and track Elaine.
Yep.
And here we are back with Harry Shum Jr. doing what he does best.
And a couple little twitches from Matt there. Very well done. Really earned his fee this episode.
Good job, Matt.
This is where Raj gets slammed in the wall, isn't it?
Yeah.
Poor Raj. #poor Raj.
#poor Raj.
Bless his
heart. Love that Raj really tries to do his job. I have to say, though, poor Raj, yes, but Magnus doing the Darth Vader chokehold.
Yeah.
I was a huge fan of that. It's the Star Wars
nerd
me that's like, yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
May the force be with you, Magnus.
Yeah, and he's not even looking either when he starts it, which is really cool. It's just like, vroom, and he's looking away. There's something so cool about that. And yeah, he just gets slammed into the wall. Poor buddy. Ugh. Oh, bless his heart.
Again.
Yes.
Way to go, folks, VFX.
Yeah. And the stunt team would have had to rig that stuff up. Yeah.
This is the thing. This show would not have worked the way it did if all of these departments between VFX and stunts and the actors and the direction and the camera folks and everyone really being on the same page and working together.
There's a real synergy with it for sure.
Yeah. Ugh, yay, Shadowhunters magic.
Yay, Shadowhunters team.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back in the hospital. Luke and Maya are gunning for Jace, but he's gone. He's long gone. And being hunted down by Maya, where we get to see our new and improved werewolf transformations, which I'm very excited about. The change from the sort of flash of light and all of a sudden you're a werewolf to the actual contortionist, like breaking of the bones, the body growing into whatever it is. And again, Alicia does a really good job of this. Like, she was very new to set and had to sort of do these motions for the first time and tell us how we were going to see this for the rest of ever. And she does a fantastic job.
And I love the new animation of the wolves, too, in this season. Now that we have folk CFX, they're so good. And each wolf is a little bit different.
Yeah, they've got a personality. Yeah.
But I will say it's a shame that that jacket got destroyed, because that was a really good jacket.
It was a good jacket. It was a solid jacket. It is a real shame.
And kudos to you for running up the stairs. How many times do you have to do that?
A few,
Yeah.
This whole thing wasn't super fun. And I wanted to be able to do the stunt at the end of this. There's a jump sort of off the roof. And unfortunately, again, this was a stunt that I was not allowed to do, which I later trained for and was actually able to do. But this is another one that Aaron took off my shoulders and does, again, a fantastic job. And it looks incredible. And we're all very proud of him. A little jealous. 14% jealous.
Mum saves you.
Mum saves me, kinda.
Kinda. And then,
kinda, sorta.
You know, pulls your heartstrings a little bit.
Yeah. She's trying to apologize, and I get that. That's cool.
Jocelyn doesn't apologize well. Maybe that's why Clary doesn't apologize well. She didn't have a great example.
Yeah. Like, you only learn from those people, right? Like, yeah.
She's like, I'm sorry, but, you know, it was hard.
Sorry, but is not an apology. That's not an apology in my book. If you follow that with anything, I'm sorry is an apology. I'm sorry I'm taking responsibility for what I've done. I'm sorry, but is not an apology in my book.
Nope.
Also, maybe I'm just pissed off because I'm having to witness this sweater again.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's affecting your judgment.
It's very
And then
possible.
We have Alder Tree again.
Yeah, he's back at
coming
it.
In. I do love that we have a smart bad guy, though. You know, it's one of the... I say bad guy. Alder Tree is not really bad. A smart obstacle. as it were.
Yeah.
He sees honestly, through just all of the shenanigans politician. That we try and pull.
Yeah, yeah, he does.
He sees the shenanigans over and over and over again. And again, poor Raj, knocked out on the bed.
He's
but I mean, it was Bless a smart way to cover the fact that they beat up the bodyguard. I don't know.
Yep, yep, yep. Poor Raj. Oh, bless him. And he's just trying to do his job. He's just trying to climb the ladder.
Yeah, but we do get to see the first glimmer of Isabel being put in the middle of the Clave and her family and having to make these hard choices and having to make these sacrifices. And really, if anyone has to make a deal with the devil in this episode, it's her.
Mm-hmm. And it happens more and more throughout that she sort of ends up in the middle of our unkempt shenanigans.
I have to say, we are a Disney show, you know, and so having this little moment where Alec is, or where Magnus is begging Alec to come back and goes, I've tried everything except, and then kisses him and it doesn't work.
No.
I love the fact that we go there. I love the fact that, you know, we don't use that excuse. We don't use that trope, but it still exists, which is nice.
Kids.
Yes.
Again, do such a fantastic job. I say kids, they're all teenagers. They're not really kids, but they do such a fantastic job. And they, yeah, they really do encapsulate everything that this story is about. And I remember being very, very pleased with this because they would have been able to watch season one, but they wouldn't have been able to see how much it's changed from season one to season two. They would have gotten little like snippets of things, but they wouldn't have seen the real drastic changes. So they do a very, very good job of this. And I'm very pleased with it.
Absolutely. Well, and I love the parallels too that we get to see between Alec and Izzy in this scene and the Simon and Clary scene we saw earlier of having this person go, you are loved for who you are. Doesn't matter what you are or who you love or any of that. It's you are you, and that's where your value lies. And that's kind of the undercurrent of the entire show.
Absolutely.
Kind of gets established over and over again. And then we're back with Malik.
Very briefly, then we're back to Simon and Izzy. Not Simon and Izzy, Simon and Clary. And you give him a very elongated kiss on the cheek, a very temptuous kiss on the cheek. I would have, like, if this was a first date for me and I got a kiss on the cheek that lasted for like 2 or 3 seconds rather than just like a peck, like a brief touching of skin, I would be like, I would love to see that person again. And I hope that she would like to see me again because that's what that felt like to me. So you told Simon a little something there. You told him a little something. You gave him a little like maybe.
A little nudge. Well, this is the thing is Clary's in this weird space where she knew how she felt about Simon and knew how she felt about Jace. And then when Valentine throws the monkey wrench of, oh, by the way, he's your brother, into it, she starts to reevaluate what love is in her mind and how she's always defined love. She's going, well, maybe if this is how I felt about this person and this is how I felt about this person, maybe I was wrong my entire life. Maybe the thing right in front of me is something I should explore, something that's always been there, something that's, you know, this person that's been there for me my entire life, who's always been my support system, always been the thing that makes me happy, always been right there. And I've kind of ignored and taken for granted. So, you know, there's a little hesitation on both parts, but they're dipping their toe in the proverbial waters.
Yeah, we're just figuring it out. Which brings us to Simon and Mum having what seems like it's going to be the conversation that is my hands down favorite scene in the show, but ends up not being that conversation because of Raphael, another proverbial monkey wrench, comes in and sort of quasi saves the day. But I think if we look at the whole story, kind of makes it worse. Tricky stuff.
That subtle overlying threat of, I can infiltrate your life. And then she invites him into their home. And I'm just sitting there, I was rewatching this, screaming at the TV.
Did we ever say in our show that vampires need to be invited in? Do we ever say that?
I believe it's either addressed or understood.
Okay.
There was some reference to it previously. Or we see it later. One of the two. I think it might even be with Heidi. I think Heidi has to be invited into the Lewis house as well.
Got it.
But the fact that Raphael is, it's an even bigger threat for Simon and an even bigger moment of, holy moly, what am I going to do? Now my home isn't even safe from Raphael. Yeah. The people I love aren't safe anywhere. It just feels like the Godfather we get to keep going to in this episode.
It does.
I absolutely love it.
Yeah, very much so.
It's like between Mission Impossible and the Godfather. But, you know, we get to see all the worlds colliding, which we rarely get to see. So often in this series, we're either in the werewolf world or the shadow hunter world or, you know, the clave world or Valentine's realm or something. Mm-hmm. But we really get to see the mundane, the downworlders, and the shadow hunters all coming to a head in this episode.
Yeah.
And now we're back at Jade Wolf. Clary's yelling at Luke. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Clary, please understand. Oh, other people have other responsibilities in this world.
Yeah. Like, and it's tricky. Like, Jace is about to have this exact same conversation with Maya. Like, you have responsibilities to your people and your family and your pack. I understand that. But, like, my responsibility is my brother's in there. I got to save him. Like, that's all it is.
But Clary's going to bat.
Clary's going to bat for Jace, whether that's correct or incorrect. Who knows? Because we haven't really interacted that much since I was just like, peace out. I'm going with bad guy. We've had like a couple of scenes, but not any real actual Clary Jace, like proper decompressing scenes. But she's going to bat.
Like 3 more episodes.
Yeah. The next scene, the Maya Jace face off, to pay attention to the background in that, because we filmed this where the raccoons used to live in the back where the hardtail was. So the first shot of Maya's sort of POV of Jace with New York in the background is all fake. All of New York in the background is completely fake because obviously we weren't there. And folks, again, folks VFX did an amazing, amazing job.
I do love how Maya has a completely new outfit here.
Yeah,
and it's so great because we sort of established the fact that the werewolves have bags of clothes hidden all over New York.
Not yet, but she does the awkward date episode. She mentions it, but yeah, they're like dotted around. They have like little stashes of clothes everywhere, which I think is genius.
You would have to. I mean, New York is a good place to do that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And then see, we do come in for the save.
Everyone does. Everyone is there. All of them get it. I'm super into it. This is why the culmination of this episode is why it's one of my absolute favorites, because so much comes together to work. We all sort of end up together in this like last sequence of scenes. And I think it's really cool. I think it's a really cool episode. I just remember the feeling of this all being cool whilst we were doing it.
Yeah. It was, again, it's like that other episode with the werewolf fight. We really get to establish the world, or the episode where we went in to save Meliorn. When we brought all the worlds together, you really get to feel that energy and that kind of epic nature of a show like this in scenes like this. And then we get to the culmination of the entire episode in Magnus's apartment. I love these scenes again because we get to see all these character relationships and there's so many little details that play into it. And you and Matt did such a beautiful job on this scene.
This
I remember
was
just
such
being
a
there
fun scene. And I and again, Greg gave us a little freedom in the edit with this. So that the Parabatai oath had to be verbatim. Obviously, it's what was in the books. It is the oath. The oath is the oath. That's how you say it. But I remember leaning into Matt at one point and just saying, give me a little second after the oath. And please don't leave me was not in the script originally. But I remember feeling the first take. I remember feeling like that's what I need to say to this person. That's what needs to come out of me, because I can't live my life without you. And I am in a completely lost situation. And the only way I can express it is, please don't leave me on my own. And Matt was like, 100%. And we did it. And Greg came out and said that was great and ends up in the show. And it is, again, one of those culminations where the writing was fantastic and the direction was fantastic. The cast around us, fantastic. And the edit was fantastic. That everything just worked in this situation. I'm getting a little emotional even talking about it because it was such an emotional day for everyone. And it just worked. I remember being really proud of this. Really, really proud of this, because everything, all except for one little CGI blip that I just noticed, the Parabatai rune on young Alec when we're doing the oath is the next Parabatai rune. So later on in the season, when they do the thing to like cut it out, that's the rune that's glowing through his shirt, not the Parabatai rune. It's the one with the little thing that cuts it out. But everything else was incredible.
Everything else is 100% accurate.
Everything else is great.
Again, I love these scenes where you have so many of these characters come together. You get to see little glimpses at all the relationships. Like even the way Greg blocked it, he put Harry and I next to each other, which you rarely get to see Magnus and Clary interact up to this point, and you get to see that sort of godfatherly relationship. You know, Claire, I grab his hand because that's all we can do. We're just literally holding on to each other for dear life, hoping, praying in any way that we can that you both are going to pull through. Because we don't know what's going to happen to either of you if one of you dies.
Yeah, no. So there really isn't a precedent for it. Like, we don't know what happens here. And he does. He, like, goes at one point. And again, I think that was Matt more than anything. Like, I don't really remember that being in the script, but I remember his face moving away from my hand and feeling like in my chest. I was like, oh my God, he's just died. He just died in my arms. And then bringing him in was part of the blocking. And I remember hearing, because I obviously can't see his face while it's happening, but the camera can. I remember hearing that first, like, and actually kind of feeling it on my chest because his chest is next to my chest, feeling that, like, first inhale for the first time, and just remembering that, like, sense of relief that washed over me, I guess, as the actor. It was really something special, this scene. It was really great. Yeah.
And then, as always happens in the shadow world, just as quickly as we get that wash of relief and joy and togetherness, Aldertree,
snatched away from us,
comes storming in. It's that heartbreaking moment where Alec gets you for just a moment, and then before he can even understand what's going on, and really Isabel, I think, is the only one who understands, because even Clary is going, wait, what's happening? We got him. We saved him. He's okay. He did the good thing. What's going on?
Yeah.
And you just get torn away from us. And Jace understands, because I think from the moment, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, from the moment that Isabel says, by order of the Clave, you sort of get the picture.
He knows 100%. He knows what's going on. And I think deep down, he knew that any of these are eventualities. Throughout the proceeds of the episode, you know, from asking Maya, like, you can kill me, but please just let me save him first.
Yeah.
It's not a veiled threat. That's like a real thing. Like, I don't mind. If this is the end of my life tonight, that's fine. But please let me sort him out. Please let me take care of my brother. And the same when he sees everyone, when the Shadow Hunters turn up, like, okay, there are consequences that are going to come with this, and that's okay, but let me do this first. Let me take care of this thing first. And it's probably one of the things I admire the most about Jace, is it does have this sort of self-sacrificial nature, unfortunately, largely because of how he was raised and how little he values himself and how much he hides that and this, that, and the other. But it is something I admire about him, is that he cares about everyone else kind of more than himself.
It puts duty and family before self. And that's the way of the Shadow Hunters, but
it's a tricky one.
Duty and family can mean different things to different Shadow Hunters.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that brings us to the end. Neatly to the end of our episode.
I have to say, well done, Sherwood. This was a beautiful episode for you. And I know you and Matt talk about this episode quite often, but it needs to be said. You two really, this is why people love the Parabatai bond so much, is because of this episode. Because of the work that you two did on this episode to make it as significant as it was. So
that's,
you know, kudos,
very sweet. Thank you very much. I actually, happen to have paused on a series of names here. So we would like to give a huge amount of credit to Leonidas. If I say any of this incorrectly, I really apologize. Leonidas Castraunas, Tomasu Sinelli, Alex Elling, Dale Whitby — Dale was Teen Jace — and Romy Weltman, who played 10-year-old Alec in order. 10-year-old Alec, 11-year-old Jace, Teen Alec, Teen Jace, and Teen Isabel. So thank you guys so much for doing such an incredible job. We know how difficult it can be, and thank you for really crushing it there.
Well done, folks. And thank you, Shadow Fam, for listening. We adore you, angels. And we'll see you next time. Return to the Shadows is hosted and executive produced by me, Catherine McNamara, and Dominic Sherwood. Our executive producer is Ling Lee. Our senior producers are Liz Hayes and Diego Tapia. Our producers are Hannah Harris and Kristen Vermilia. And our intern is Sam Katz. Original music by Alex Kinsey and performed by Alex Kinsey and Catherine McNamara.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.